Yeah, I probably should have listened to the State of the City.
Maybe I should have too. You know, the last time I actually cared about the State of the City was like I went to Megan Berry's.
Right.
And they did it at the amphitheater, Ascend. And I remember I went, it was like an easy day to go. I parked at the Entrepreneur Center where right. I can park for free. And then I just sure. walked down to Ascend.
Right.
I got down there and Peter Frampton opened.
Oh, no, that would be cool.
Right? Frampton came out with an acoustic and played Show Me the Way. And,
how can we get Peter Frampton to do the theme music for this show?
The best way to do it is just not to tell him.
Okay.
And then do it, and then we can deal with the licensing later.
Oh, by the way, I think we're rolling, so...
Really? Well, yeah. That's a great time for that. I retract anything that I said about illegally using Peter Frampton's music. I'm a copyright law professor, so I'm not allowed to
okay.
do
that. Okay, well, and I'm Jay, and you are?
Professor Brian.
Professor Brian, and this is the BNA Podcast.
Welcome aboard.
Okay, so we're back after some eventful weeks over the past few weeks, I think, since we last recorded.
It's hard to even imagine that a city could go from where we were to where we are in such an incredibly short period of time.
It really is. I mean, I think at our last recording with when we had Freddie, we had just gone through the school shooting. But we had not gone through the legislature.
Right. The legislature had not ignored the school shooting completely yet. Now they have completely ignored it and adjourned and gone home. They have expelled two black lawmakers who were then, of course,
reinstated
by their localities.
Over the weekend.
Really just took like no time to do that. But it was, I got to tell you, we were talking about this before, but the stupidity required of the state of Tennessee to go to all this trouble when you have a supermajority. It's what's happened in Montana. They just did the same thing. But in Tennessee, you got a supermajority, and you're going to win the vote no matter what. Mm-hmm. No exceptions. No time are you ever going to not win the vote. And all you got to do is let people talk, and when they get done talking, take the vote and win. Had they done that, none of this expelling business would have happened.
Yeah, but as we've talked about, they are appealing to a particular audience.
Yeah, they're activists,
and that audience is all that they believe in. I tell you what was striking to me. I don't know if you heard the recording of the guys arguing with each other about who was to blame for the way they were being looked at, but I think sometimes I tend to be cynical about folks' motives,
sure.
The folks, that they're just exploiting people
right.
and those beliefs. But I honestly think these guys believe that the world is coming to an end if they allow any sort of other belief or other background to kind of seep into our state.
Yeah, it's shocking to see this many grown men acting on such a tremendous fear of two young black gentlemen.
It's
just fear. I mean, you can tell. There's no other way to explain it. When you act like that, when you get into fight or flight, which is how our legislature operates, and it's a fight or flight legislature.
Yeah.
You see it, and it's like, holy crap. What are what are you so scared of?
Exactly.
I don't know what they think's going to happen.
Yeah.
If somebody talks.
Well, and another thing that has happened since we last recorded is we're going to have a stadium. I think we said we should go back and find that clip of 2 years ago.
Yeah, the very first clip, the very first podcast we ever did, we're getting a stadium.
We are getting a stadium. we predicted that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can argue about whether it's a good thing or not. It's just a reality. I guess what you can say, as several of our mayoral candidates have said, is, the state's paying this time, which they didn't pay last time.
Which they didn't pay last time. It helps.
The Titans and the NFL are paying, which is good.
Right. Nice chunk.
So, and they did approve this sort of community benefits thing where there's going to be money going into a slush fund.
But there's no number, right?
No, but it's 10% of the
it's like, right. So
basically, they're tithing on their ticket sales.
Got it. There you go.
I think, and if I think if you can think of it that way, you know, if you've been around a church at all, you know, you're supposed to make a tithe on on your profits. So it's a it's either on the sales or the profits. I don't know, but they're tithing. Right, right. Of course, you've worked in the movie business, so you know that you
can, accounting. It's all about accounting.
You can manipulate that in all sorts of
ways.
Yes, but
net points are no points.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. So so we are a lot of things have happened. There was a Metro. Mayor Cooper did his final State of Metro, which we didn't listen to.
We didn't listen to because he's done.
And I read the story, and it really didn't
say. They didn't mention much about him. They talked about there was a kid there. They got a lot of press because he did a really fun, I don't know, he said something funny.
Yeah. So, so all of that's to say a lot has happened, but we're still working through talking with our mayoral candidates because in case you didn't know, there's going to be an election in August.
This is coming right up, people.
It's like less than 100 days.
Right around the corner.
I know a lot of folks out there are like, yeah, we're going to mayoral election someday, someday. And it's the day is coming. Early voting is not that far away. Today we're talking with Matt Wilcher, who is one of our mayoral candidates. He's actually has the he is the leading candidate in terms of raising funds for the office, and is a good guy. It's a great conversation. So we hope you'll stick with us and listen to our conversation with Matt. Well, we're here with Matt Wilcher, one of our candidates for mayor, one of our 54 or 60 candidates we've got. And Matt, welcome.
What day is it today?
Exactly.
There's going to be three more by tonight.
Yeah, exactly. When is the deadline for filing?
It's May the 18th.
Oh, well, so we're
That's
coming up
birthday.
On it. Yeah, well, good.
I'll file.
That's when you catch up with
Happy birthday.
Me, right?
Well, I have
You're
to say,
a candidate for mayor.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Here's your special gift.
Exactly.
You, too, can run for mayor of Nashville.
Well, Matt, welcome to the B&A podcast.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you here. And you are one of the one or two or maybe three candidates that actually grew up in Nashville. And so I want to start off with just a question for you, which is how do you see Nashville today versus what you grew up in? How have things changed? What are the challenges that we need to face? What are some of the things that you're experiencing as somebody that grew up in this city?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And you know, there's so many folks who have moved to Nashville more recently. Each person has their own point of reference to Nashville. My story real quick, born and raised, grew up here, went to Metro Nashville Public Schools. I'll date myself now on this. I graduated from high school in 1992. I went to Hume Fogg for high school. And I mentioned that because when you walked out of Hume Fogg and looked to the left, Lower Broad looked real different than it does today. There was no Bridgestone, of course, and not many bars. I think there was a Service Merchandise down there, actually.
There was a Service Merchandise.
Yeah.
I think the Merchants might have been there by 91 or 92, somewhere in there. But
Merchants was there.
I think most of the adult bookstores, though, had moved out by then.
Was the Alamo still there?
I don't know. Carl,
the Alamo was still there.
Was it still there?
Carl Dean cleared out a bunch of them when he was legal director, which was 99 to 07. Anyway,
gotcha.
But your question was, how has Nashville changed? Well, it's changed in a lot of ways, obviously. We have professional sports teams, which we didn't have when I was growing up here. The city has also changed in terms of the population in some significant ways. This is a crazy statistic. But do you know what percentage of the Davidson County residents were born outside of the United States in the year 2000? So this is after I grew up. But the year 2000, what percentage were born outside of the United States?
I'm going 11.
11? Now, I'll go with that. Let's say 15.
But mine goes to 11. I'm a
2%.
2%. Wow.
2% of the population of Davidson County was born outside the United States in the year 2000. And today, it is 14%.
14. Okay. Wow.
So, I mean, that is a dramatic change. Mm-hmm. And dramatic in part, I think, we have not seen a sort of backlash that you've seen in other places. I think that's a testament to the hospitality of the city, to the welcomeness. And I think those are some of the things that have continued, but is absolutely vital that we maintain it, right? Nashville is a welcoming place. It's a place where you can move for the music business or for healthcare or because it's a place that you know want to live with family members. Nashville's a great and welcoming place. That is something it feels to me like we're at risk of losing. I think it's vitally important that we hold on to that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, when you and I first met, you were working for Mayor Dean as the economic development guy for the city.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about sort of your work history or kind of how things have played out since then for
sure.
you.
Yeah. Sure. Well, so before I went to work with Mayor Dean, I spent 15 years in the private sector.
Okay.
So a couple years in San Francisco, 6 or 7 years in New York, and then I moved back home to Nashville. And so have that foundational experience of having 15 years in the private sector, working in business, and I learned some really great lessons and met some great people through that. But it was in 2011 that I joined the mayor's office as director of economic and community development. And that was even just that time period, a dozen years ago, was a very different time in our city's history. Unemployment rate was over 8%. There were a lot of families struggling. And so I served in that role for 8 years under 3 different mayors. Thought a few times I'd go back to the private sector, but folks asked me to stay. And I really loved the work. It was really rewarding for me. Mm-hmm. We helped 42,000 Nashvillians get jobs during that time, which was a really wonderful pleasure for me to get to be able to contribute back to the city in that way. So in 2019, so 8 years later, I looked around the city. That didn't feel like the biggest challenge facing our city. There were
right.
other challenges. And so I worked with then Mayor Briley to launch a very ambitious affordable housing plan. And I moved to MDHA, the Public Housing Authority, to work on that, really taking areas of concentrated poverty and transforming them into thriving mixed income, mixed use neighborhoods. Did that for 3 years and then launched my campaign for mayor about 9 months ago now, July of last year.
Gotcha. So,
yeah, do a historical real quick because
yeah.
it's one of the things that I always talk about. I moved back to Nashville as well 12 years ago. And when I got here, there was no convention center. And the one thing I always say when people ask about the growth of Nashville is very simple.
Yeah.
Since there was no convention center and there was no television show.
Yeah.
Which were the two big explosions that happened
yeah.
between 2012 and 2014.
Yeah.
It topsy-turvied the city, right?
For sure.
The city that was not... I mean, I joke about it now, but we've opened 42 hotels like
yeah.
in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And when the convention center opened, we built one.
Right.
Yeah. Right? The
right.
Omni opened at the same time.
Right,
or,
yeah. That was pulling teeth to get the Omni.
To get one.
Right. To get Omni was a gargantuan lift, which I think, to your point, people don't really remember very well.
No, it's difficult to picture Nashville without... the Music City Center, right?
Yeah.
The one question I've got, though, is that, you know, recently there was a poll out that says a majority of Nashvillians feel like Nashville's moving in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And some people would point to sort of unchecked development.
Yeah.
You know, the economic development was great and it's all wonderful and great, but it's kind of turned Nashville into something different and
yeah.
struggle. I mean, how do you respond to that about, and particularly sort of the dissatisfaction that folks are feeling about what Nashville is right now?
Yeah, no, it's true. That is a real feeling. And it's funny, I shouldn't talk about my competitors, but one of the other candidates who moved here 3 years ago is running a campaign talking about the change in growth in Nashville. I think that just speaks to the salience of that political message right now. And the deep-seated feeling in Nashville. It has changed a lot. The city has changed, and change is hard. Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of people who don't feel like they are participating in the success of the city. And we've seen some small, tangible ways. I mean, this is honestly, it was a lot of what motivated me to get into the race. We have a big tax increase, and a few months later, we're not picking up the trash. Like, literally not picking
right.
up the trash. Potholes in the road. It has felt like the city isn't doing the basic things that we need to be doing to have this city function well for the people who live here. Affordability, the issue that motivated me to move over to the Public Housing Authority. I mean, mm-hmm. there are a number of changes that have come and difficulties that have come. We have to get back to doing the things well to make sure that growth and diversity that we talked about
right.
at the top of the show, right? It's an increasingly diverse city, but make sure that it's actually working for the people who live here. I think that's the balance that we have to strike.
So, I mean, one of the things, and again, affordable housing is on your list. It's kind of at the top of your priority list.
Yeah.
But You know, there seems to be this disconnect between sort of affordability and attainability. You know,
yeah.
as you know, I do a lot of work with homeless folks. And
yes.
the folks will say, well, why aren't we solving the homeless problem here in Nashville? And part of it's because there's nowhere for them to move to.
Right.
How do you respond to that? And how do you really think the city or the mayor can try to do things that will help make it attainable
yeah.
for folks of all parts of the population? Or are we just going to kind of throw up our hands and say, well, you got to be a rich person to live in Nashville?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. That is a disaster for our city if that's what happens. I think we are all richer. So as you know, I grew up going to Edge Hill United Methodist right. Church. Bill Barnes was my pastor growing up. I moved to work at MDHA in part because of the sermons I heard every Sunday.
Right.
That we are all richer when we're living in community with each other.
Sure.
And this idea of transforming areas of concentrated poverty into thriving mixed-income neighborhoods is not to save one group or the other, but rather we are all richer when we're in community and in conversation with each other. So no, we cannot become a city that only rich people can afford to live in. And I think that it is vitally important. There's a bunch of specific ways. I'd be happy to get into details about how we do that. But I'll give one example. So in 2018, maybe even been 2017 or 2018, there were dollars appropriated for permanent supportive housing for individuals experiencing homelessness.
Right.
It took the city 4 years to design that, redesign it. They looked at relocating it several times. Like, we don't have that amount of time.
Exactly.
The individuals who are experiencing homelessness don't have 4 years for somebody to redesign something 87 times.
Right.
We have to get to work attacking these problems today. And again, that's why I'm running for mayor, to tackle the challenges that we have today and not wring our hands and do another study and pontificate. And I mean, we got real challenges for folks.
Are mayors pontificate?
I mean,
I heard of such a thing. So
I have a great
one
joke
of the things,
about that.
The soapbox I've been on lately, and I'm on soapboxes regularly, is again, the need to build capacity. That as we've expanded as a city, we've grown population wise and all that, and we've sort of acted as if the poverty issues of poverty are not going to expand with that.
Yep.
And what I'm seeing is I'm push a little bit on the MDHA thing. Income kind of thing. I like the idea of it.
Yeah.
But what it seems like is that in doing that, it has reduced the number of housing units that are available, that we're not expanding capacity along the way. And that's true in all sorts of areas. I mean, one of our organizations that provides homeless outreach work just announced that they're actually shrinking their staff to do that.
Yeah.
At a time when we really, I mean, the PIT count hasn't officially come out, but it's going to be flat, maybe a little increase.
Yeah.
And after all the resources we've spent on it, it doesn't seem like we're making a real big dent in the issue of homelessness. So, I mean, you've been involved on the inside in MDHA. You know kind of what's going on there. And for a while, it seemed to me like MDHA was more concerned on with being a developer or
yeah.
funding these developments that really were not affordable. I mean, how do you think that needs to transform?
Thank you for asking that question. I think some folks feel that, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
The reality is quite something different. So in Casey, where we first started Envision,
right.
we are actually adding to the number of deeply affordable units. And I mean, not to get super nerdy
sure,
on this,
no,
but affordable housing, I think, is an issue for folks across the socioeconomic spectrum.
Right.
If you're middle class, you want to be able to afford a home. If you are even wealthy, right?
Yeah.
It's better if you're not spending all of your income on housing. But certainly those who are most vulnerable, it's really tough to build a home that's affordable to someone who makes 30% of area median income.
Right.
So let's focus on that part first. At Casey, we are actually adding to the number of deeply affordable units on the footprint. And we are actually not displacing anyone. No one is displaced. Yeah. This is a little bit of a contrast, getting back to history, to how the Hope 6 program worked, mm-hmm. which did exactly what you talked about. John Henry Hale over
right.
on Charlotte. It was an area that was a pretty tough place, lots of crime when I was growing up.
Sure.
The Hope 6 program came in there, gave everyone who lived there a voucher, said, go find a home somewhere else, bulldozed it, then lowered the number of housing units on the site and made a number of them market rate. So the number of affordable units actually was shrunk. Now, today, John Henry Hale is spectacular. And so I'm not going to criticize John Henry Hale, but I will say just in terms of total number of units, right, there are just fewer units. And I think there could be some debate about, is there enough density at John Henry Hale relative to the fact that it's, you know, a mile from the state capital.
Right.
But the model at Envision, what MDHA is actually doing today is adding to the number of deeply affordable units while also adding workforce units. Mm-hmm. Those are affordable to folks making between 80% and 120% of area median income. I mean, like quite literally the middle class.
Right.
And then also market rate units. And we're doing that. I still say we. I'm still,
yeah,
they are doing that.
We'll let you do that.
But
it's okay.
But by adding to the density. So there's a significant increase in density, which I think is appropriate when you're located, you know, a 9-iron from Nissan Stadium and a mile from downtown.
Right. Well, you just mentioned Nissan Stadium. We probably should.
Gosh almighty, who would have ever thought that would come up?
That would come up. But yeah. So apparently it's a done deal now.
Yeah.
It's been approved. And
here we go.
That. But, you know, what...
It's just hard to even ask a question about it at this point, right? I mean, how do you even formulate a question?
Well, and we've
can I make my comment? Insert my wicked comment about the whole thing. It was like when the council was voting, and we spoke with council people about this. When the council was voting, I feel compelled to remind the council that they were voting for a stadium that was partially funded by an organization and a group of people in the government in Tennessee that had just tried to cut them in half and took 45% of the seats on the Sports Authority.
Yeah.
Which would mean mathematically that you would ask them for an increase proportionally to their contribution to the stadium and reduce the amount of money the city would pay into the stadium. So two things to you. Number one is, what's the next step? We're getting a damn stadium. Here it comes. We're going to have it. So what do we do next? Right? How do we actually make it help as opposed to what I think it will do? And number two, what do we do about this entire, you know, East Side plan that's not really a plan? It's called Envision because it's only a vision. There's money.
And just to be clear, I mean, we're not anti-state. We've said for 2 years, we're going to have a stadium.
We're getting a stadium.
The powers that be had determined we were going to have a stadium. That was fine. So we're not advocating against it, but we are wanting to understand how it's kind of done, where we go from here.
Sure.
In terms of,
what do we do with this thing?
Yeah.
Well, so, gosh, there's so many different answers that I want to give to this question. You're right. The stadium's happening at this point. Council's voted. The state voted. So I think there are a number of commitments that the Titans have made, and it is absolutely vital that we hold them accountable to those commitments. I think that they genuinely want to honor those obligations. But, you know, folks get distracted. There's different things that come up. And I think that Jahari Matthews, who helps run their foundation, if you haven't talked to her, she's fantastic. Burke Nihil, the CEO. I think the Titans want to be great community members. And so I think we should just make sure that they follow through on the commitments they've made. I think it's important that, and this is one of the things I talk a lot about on the campaign trail, and I even mentioned at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the dissatisfaction is folks feel like they haven't participated in the success of the city. We need to make sure that there's a diversity of suppliers and contractors who help build the stadium, folks who work at the stadium, community opportunities for folks at the stadium. And so as it relates specifically to the stadium, I think the most important thing for us all to do is what we do every day. Hold mm-hmm. people accountable to the commitments they make.
Sure.
Right? So that's the first thing. I think then the question becomes the broader East Bank. And I will be honest, my most significant concern about the Titans deal was that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Titans stadium deal, and it sounds like you guys have discussed it in great detail, right? It's funded primarily by the state, $500 million from the state, $840 million from the Titans and the NFL, and then a 1% increase in the hotel occupancy tax.
Right.
That's the funding mechanisms. What's not clear to me, and I think I'm following this about as closely as anybody, mm-hmm. is what are the obligations of the city to f- fulfill the build out and any commitments around it. So mm-hmm. most specifically, parking, right? It's a bunch of parking going away. We're going to redevelop it. How's parking? What's that going to cost? Who's paying for it? What's the timetable? There's discussions about a spine, a new transit corridor. Okay, how much is that going to cost? What's the timetable? I'm hoping to be mayor in about 4 months. We're coming up on the election pretty quickly. Like, I'm sorry, what are the expectations about this year's capital spending plan, next year's capital spending plan? That part has, and I will give a lot of kudos to the Councilman Mendez and the East Bank Study Committee. They've asked a lot of questions. They haven't gotten a lot of clear answers about what's the commitment, because I think that there are a lot of neighborhoods here in Madison, Bellevue, where I started the morning, Antioch, Joelton, Bordeaux, that feel like there's been a heck of a lot of investment downtown.
Absolutely.
And not much investment in their neighborhoods.
Right.
So I think that there is a great opportunity to reinvest in our riverfront, to shine more of a spotlight there. I think it's a great opportunity. But like, before we go spending hundreds of millions of dollars to build a new neighborhood where no one lives today, maybe we ought to invest in some of the existing neighborhoods that have been neglected for far too long.
So this brings up an interesting question, because you announced prior to Cooper. Mayor Cooper. Yeah, we shouldn't say that. But anyway, to Mayor
Cooper,
we have
a great story
announcing
about that
he wasn't going to run.
Yeah. Correct.
You clearly thought that there was something that needed to change in his approach or in the approach of the city. What do you think? And not to put you on the spot, Mayor Cooper's had some interesting circumstances, and that's great. But you obviously thought that you could do it better.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that led you to that belief?
I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, you mentioned sort of the city feeling like it's on the wrong track.
Right.
And I talked a little bit about sort of the basics, just back to basics. So I, just to be very clear, I was never running against anyone. And I know you weren't saying that.
Yeah.
I just thought that my background in the private sector, in the nonprofit sector, and in the public sector, I had some experience, some knowledge, some insights to contribute ideas to how we ought to be doing it. So that's the framework. Specifically, I'm a graduate of Metro Nashville Public Schools. There are some wonderful schools in Nashville, but I think most of us would agree, not every child in Nashville is receiving a world-class education. That's unacceptable.
Right.
That is unacceptable. So it's basic things like trash pickup, it's potholes, it's having the city function well. I spent the morning doing a trash pickup in Bellevue. Our city's too dirty. We need to clean it up. There are too many potholes in the streets. We need to fill them. There are so many things that I think are achievable with focus, with attention, and with public-private partnerships. I'm a big believer. The government sector can't do it all by itself. The private sector can't do it all by itself. The nonprofit sector can't do it all by itself. Everyone has to be working together with alignment of goals and interests and execution. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, we can really make things much better in the city. Right. We are a growing, thriving city. Right. It should be better.
But we're also, I mean, you're going to, whoever the new mayor is going to have an interesting time in about a year or two. Because we've been coasting in some ways with a lot of federal funding, ARP funding, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to go away. And so, like, again, what near to my heart is this, you know, the $50 million that Mayor Cooper gave for to deal with homeless response. But the problem is we're building infrastructure with that there's no funding for after that money goes away.
Yeah.
And so there are going to be some financial challenges in ahead of you, don't you think?
100%. I mean, you mentioned ARP funding, the ARP funding, ESSER funding for schools.
Right.
Yes, there have been significant investments made by this city in critical needs, but with one-time funding. And it's ironic that there was this discussion 4 years ago about meeting long-term needs with one-time funding. There was a whole criticism about that. Mm-hmm. I think that's an issue we're going to be facing again.
Right.
So I think it is really important. Let's talk about homelessness specifically, an issue you've been a champion on, and thank you for your work on that. Mayor Cooper and I'm not running against Mayor Cooper, so this will sound more critical than it is, but really I tell this story, I hope, to illuminate how I will function as mayor. Mayor Cooper hired someone to focus on homelessness early in his term, and MDHA actually paid half of that person's salary. So it was a joint, that person was paid jointly by MDHA. And I said, okay, look, here's the thing. We don't need to do another study, but I want you to go spend 30 days surveying the nation, finding best practices, doing a critical assessment of what Nashville's doing well, a SWOT analysis, right?
Right.
Not that complicated. We're doing well on transient housing, poor on permanent supportive housing. We're doing great on addiction, but we're doing poor on mental health. I don't know what the answers are, but go do an analysis, then put together based on best practices. Here's the long range plan. And then say to the city, Metro Council,
right,
the nonprofit sector, many great nonprofits that we have here, the state government, look, here's what we need to do to address this problem long term. Here is the plan. And then there can be a discussion about the plan. And here's what it's going to cost. And we need to go get $10 million a year from the feds. And we need to go get $5 million a year from the state. And city, we need to step up for this. And philanthropies, you need to do that. Whatever that plan is, I don't know what the plan is.
Right.
But go lay out that plan. Do that analysis and lay it out. And not like a study for a study, but like very specific with a call to action.
Right.
And then there was an issue opening the cold weather shelter that first winter, and that never happened.
Right.
Like that's, we have to have long-term plans. There needs to be clear communication about them. You've heard me mention public-private partnerships. I think this is true in transit. It's true in homelessness. It's true in education. There should be a long-range plan extending well beyond the term of any mayoral administration, but with buy-in from the public sector, the private sector, nonprofit sector, about here's what we're going to go try and do. Right. And here's what we need each of you to do.
Right? So I mean, you've...
And then hold people accountable.
Yeah, you've worked under a bunch of mayors now, and or at least some of our more recent mayors. And it always seems like on the front end, there's a lot of talk about planning, about doing this. And then what it ends up being is, well, we're putting out this particular, and I will be critical of Mayor Cooper. You know, what my perspective has been is that our homeless response has been what's in the press at this particular moment. So we're going to close down this encampment. No, we got to go close down. And so it's all been focused on this kind of, you know, whack-a-mole,
reactive
kind of thing. Is that just a structural limitation of the mayor's office? And how do you propose to get over through that?
Yeah, I'll make a joke that will probably be used by a competitor at some point. Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others.
Yes.
Look, there are political realities, and I'd love to argue against them or say that I am immune to them, but that's not true.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I will never run for Congress. This is a stone cold lock that you can take to the bank. I will never run for U.S. Congress. A, I'm an executive. I'm not a legislator.
Right.
I just don't think I would be good in that role. But B, you run for office every 2 years and you're subjected to this constant political battle. It's exhausting. Mayor's office is a little bit insulated from it, but still subjected to the same influences that you're talking about. It is vital. And I have told myself this repeatedly as I've watched mayors who I've worked for and as I've thought about how I will serve as mayor, that it is absolutely vital to dictate the agenda and to just be respectful. There are reasons that we've seen these issues pop up. Brookmead was a real issue.
Right.
For the people who lived in that neighborhood.
Sure.
So my ex-wife lived a quarter mile from there.
Exactly.
And I drove past there all the time. Like, mm-hmm. It's a huge issue. It's not to say we ignore these critical issues, but you don't consume yourself with them. Mm-hmm. You have to be looking down the field.
Right.
And hopefully, if you do that and do it well, that over time, there will be fewer and fewer crisis issues because you're managing in front of it.
Well, that,
y'all have me back in 4 years and tell me if I've done a good job.
Right.
Or not. I'm serious.
We'd be happy to.
Yeah. We'll definitely do that. I will say this though, that we talk about political influence. You've raised the most money.
I have.
Right. And really, really well and really, really fast. And generally speaking, what we've learned in American politics, like you said about running for Congress, that's a lot of people with a lot of questions, right? People write checks.
Yeah.
I write checks. Everybody writes checks. And when you write a check, There's a very specific reason. What do you think, number one, on a positive side, what do you think is, you know, really juicing positive fundraising for you? And on the other side of it, do you feel like there's any limitations?
Yeah, for sure. Yes to both. So I'll brag on myself for a moment since you opened the door for me to do that. So we've now received over 2,500 donations from more than 1,800 individuals.
Perfect.
I mean, that's a pretty broad base of support, and I'm really proud about it. We've received a donation. We actually, in our first 2 weeks, received a donation from every single one of the 35 Metro Council districts. Let's also all celebrate that we're actually still going to have 35 Metro Council
exactly.
districts. So I am grateful for that support. I think that I was able to raise that much money, have been able to raise that much money, in part because I've been doing this work in Nashville. I was born here. I was raised here. I've been working here. I know a lot of people in Nashville, and I hope that they, having worked with me, believe that I'm capable of doing this job and doing it really well. I hope that's the case, but I would invite you to go interview those 1,800 people and tell them why. I'm sure that there's, you know, different folks have different reasons for doing it.
Sure.
So what are the downsides of that? The downsides are there, you know, 1,800 plus another 700,000 folks. I am interviewing for a job. Well, right. I will have 700,000 bosses, mm-hmm. 700,000 bosses. And I am someone who believes that everyone should have a seat at the table. When we talk about education policy, let's have the charter folks and the non-charter folks, the voucher folks. Let's all sit at a table and talk about it and have a discussion of ideas like you guys are inviting us to here today.
Right.
Let's talk through the ideas really substantively. And because far too often, we're off in our silos. And folks on this wing are arguing and saying this part, and they're, you know, making some good points. And folks over here are arguing and that this is their perspective and they're making some good points, but there's no opportunity for folks to sit down and genuinely engage in conversations in a respectful way. So that's hard to do with 700,000 bosses. It's not easy, but that will be the challenge that I have as mayor. I didn't answer your question directly.
That's pretty good. I mean, the one thing I always am curious about in these situations is, have you turned any down?
Oh,
have you
gosh.
Had to, right? I mean, it's like, it always comes, because in Tennessee is a pretty polarized place, right?
Yeah.
So there are some people that I think it would be hard for me to accept money from.
Right.
Now, not individuals. I give individuals whatever kind of, they can think whatever they want to. This
right.
is America. But there's some groups,
right.
you know, that have some opinions.
Sure.
Probably heard about them.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I always wonder about that. I was reticent not asking that question last time.
No, look, it's a great question. I can't think of anyone I've turned it down from. I mean, almost all of my donations, I won't say all, I'm sure there's been a few that aren't, but almost all of my donations have been from individuals. But my philosophy on that is, look, there are some groups that I find abhorrent. I will not name them. But look, I am me. Like, mm-hmm. I am super transparent and I hope very clear. Like, I am me. You want to donate to me? Great. Like, I'm not going to change based upon how anyone donates to me. Like, I am me and I want to earn your vote. I want to earn your support. I've been pretty clear. Like, I bet you I have a bunch of donors who will piss off people from across the spectrum.
Right.
Because I genuinely am trying to appeal to people. I'm not trying to appeal. I believe that the approach that I have will appeal to people from across the political spectrum. And so, anyway.
No, that's a good one. It's like, I have one follow-up though, which is not on that same subject, but it was like, we were talking about a minute ago. Like, I know that Cooper brought in a homeless czar. And then my least favorite appointment so far was the appointment of the sort of downtown liaison.
Nightmare.
Yeah, right. And so, which I thought, well, that's neat.
Nightmare. Wouldn't that be a good series?
Nightmare. I think it was done. Actually. Yeah. It's a David Lynch film. No.
Yeah.
it would be a great David Lynch. I'll call him.
Yeah.
So my thing was, I have felt like since we moved here, I moved to Nashville, back to Nashville. I went to Belmont.
Yeah, you came
back. So I moved back here 12 years ago. And the one thing that you know is that, well, number one, Nashvillians are the worst drivers in North America. This is one of those things we just have to accept. You don't have to, don't comment. Don't comment. It's not good for you to comment.
don't attack my future constituents. Right.
Number two, we don't have a traffic czar.
Well, we kind of do. We have the Department.
We have the DOT, right? Which was an excuse not to have a traffic czar, right? It was like, oh, here's what we'll do. We'll make, I mean, quite literally, I have, and I've done this for a long time. I go out and meet people and talk to them. So I Uber drive, right? And I go out and talk to people and I ask a whole bunch of people. By the way, I asked 50 people in the last 2 weeks if they decided on who they're voting for mayor, and only one out of 50 has decided. So this is good.
It's amazing. I want to get to your question. Like, so I mentioned I was at this community cleanup in Bellevue, and I spoke to someone there. I won't give any defining characteristics of who he is, but someone who is very engaged in his community. I said, well, yeah, I've got seven events today. He said, are you going to your next event now? Yes, I have seven events. He said, seven events? Wait, isn't the election in like 2 years? It's like, no, sir. It's actually in less than 100 days. People are not engaged. I think it's because the state, right? All the chaos at the state, at the national level. And then obviously, I mean, we haven't discussed it yet, but I mean, the shooting on March 27th, I mean, just, and then all the chaos that followed after that. I mean, there is zero focus on the mayor's race.
Right.
It's amazing. But anyway, you were,
so then back
the
to
nightmare
the,
thing.
Yeah. And there's more stuff to talk about, but it's like, I feel like engaging the community, right? When you go out and you drive around in a big circle in Nashville, if you're coming from Antioch into Nashville, which is a horrible idea, don't ever do that. The, you know, 24, the corridor, and the feeders, like the ones that we are in charge of as a
Murfreesboro
city.
Murfreesboro Pike.
Oh my gosh. But it's like Nolensville. So here's what you notice when you drive around a lot. Wealthy areas of town seem to have pretty well-timed lights, except for entering Green Hills, which has been an issue since the 70s. Mm-hmm. And the Murfreesboro Road, honestly, like a high school class with a stopwatch could fix that problem in a day and a half, right? I mean, there is nothing going on there that helps those poor people that are commuting from a long distance now because of costs of housing.
Yes.
Nothing helps them get into town.
Amen. Amen. We can talk about trans. I actually do have a transit plan. I don't know how much time we have. I'd love to talk about that.
We've got as much time as you want.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically on traffic signalization, this is something I have on my website. We talked about why did I run for mayor. It's like this exact issue that you're talking about. So we have the road capacity we have. Mm-hmm. So we're going to build more lanes, or are we going to use the lanes that we have more efficiently? Our lights have not been synchronized for over 5 years.
Right.
Traffic has changed over the last 5 years along Murfreesboro Pike and Nolensville Pike in particular. It is unacceptable. I actually met with the director of NDOT earlier this week and talked about this issue with her.
Right.
Now, the good news is, and I will give credit to Mayor Cooper because we've criticized him, there is a traffic management center that will open later this year that will begin to do some of this stuff. It is far too late in happening, but I want to—
Yeah, it feels like a study.
Yeah, no, this one, I mean, it's good. I haven't visited it yet, it'll open in August. And I will tell you, as mayor, I will make sure that that is happening, and not just happening once and then happens again 7 years later.
Right.
But that there's continuous improvement. And so that center that's going to do continuous improvement, we're going to need to spend millions of dollars to update the lights that we have.
Sure.
Because some of the lights don't— you can't do the signal optimization on, but anyway.
Yeah, no, but it's a big deal because, you know, the thing is, mayors get elected based on traffic and trash, right? I mean, this is the
and
world.
And get voted out
right?
based
and
on
get,
traffic
They
and
really
trash.
Get booted. And, you know, traffic and trash is a big deal. And when you go outside of this church where we're sitting right now recording and hang a left to go into town on Gallatin, you will an enormous amount of time at Due West. Because the next two lights, and like I said, I get it. I think it would be great to upgrade to the multi-million dollar per mile system that actually synchronizes the lights based on traffic patterns and all that kind of— that's a great. But honest to goodness, a high school math class and a stopwatch could fix most of the problems.
Could get us from zero to at least 40 or 50, not all the way to 100.
Absolutely. And we also look at the same problem happens downtown in the district downtown where we have now deployed this like army of cops and fake cops to work on six blocks of downtown that have no plan, right? It's the worst managed traffic city of this size anywhere in the world. And there's this thing where we seem to be starting afresh. Every time when there's an event at Nissan, every time there's an event at Bridgestone,
every
time there's a downtown event, you drive down there. And it's a great thing. I love doing it because I learn so much. But you drive down there and you go like, they have no idea. Which means they have no leadership, which means they have no boss, which means there is no downtown plan. There never has been. It's frustrating because other candidates have talked about the fact that downtown is almost an impenetrable place at this point, right? And people that live there and want to walk to the symphony find it dangerous and difficult and all that.
Unacceptable.
And I'm like, but there's six cops on every corner on the weekends, and they're not actually cops. That Channel 4 made a big expose about that this week. They're fake cops who should not have the word police on their uniforms. It's illegal in the state of Tennessee. It's impersonating a police officer, and it is actually a substantial violation of the law. And I find those things really frustrating. There's no plan.
Yep.
You know, the SEC came here and does a basketball tournament at Bridgestone. You can get in and out of downtown in 7 minutes. When we run it ourselves as a city, it takes 45.
Yeah.
That's a plan, right?
So, again,
I'm all about traffic. I'm from L.A.
We talk about plans a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things. I do want to, because you kind of referred to this a little bit. One of the great challenge it feels like we have right now is our relationship with the state, which is not good. And
not good.
And you know, how do we respond to that? Because obviously there are a lot of folks, well, I'll say this, at the state level that don't want a diversity of conversation to happen. I mean, how do we either repair that relationship or get the state to kind of accept that Nashville is going to be this thing that's different than the rest of the state?
Yeah. So your sales taxes mm-hmm. are literally paying for the teachers in Obion County and
right.
Ray County and Hancock County. And I think that's important for the folks at the state to focus on, that Nashville's success has been a major engine for the revenue increases at the state. And they shouldn't be risking screwing it up. Now, how do we do that? I think it is the job of the mayor to build relationships. The current breakdown in the relationship between the state and the city is insanely frustrating to me. It is insanely frustrating to me because it shouldn't be happening.
Right.
It didn't happen. When Megan Berry was mayor and Bill Haslam was governor, there are clearly political differences between the two of them, but you didn't see this fighting. When Carl Dean was mayor, you didn't see this fighting. And you may say to me, okay, Matt, but that was 5 years ago, 7 years ago. It's a different time in our politics today.
Right.
But I would say, well, look at Memphis. You don't see the state taking shots at Memphis like they are at Nashville.
Well, that's because they've always thought that Memphis was part of Arkansas anyway.
Right,
so,
right,
you
right.
know,
but they're not taking shots.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true, at least in part, because Mayor Strickland has spent the last 8 years building relationships with the state, with the Shelby County delegation, certainly, with the leadership in the state and the Senate, certainly, mm-hmm. but with every random legislator up and down I-40 between Memphis and Nashville. So what's my plan? My plan is to build relationships with the folks at the state, but that's not the full plan. I mean, I'm here on a podcast giving my whole playbook. So
right, sure,
I'm disclosing the playbook, but I told you I'm a transparent guy. I think it is the job of the mayor to build relationships, to sit down with people, particularly people who you may disagree with on certain political issues. Difficult conversations are important. It's a lot harder to hate somebody you know, mm-hmm. right? Somebody you don't know, you can other them, and man, they're just morons. When you sit down and have a conversation with somebody, you know who they are. You may disagree. You may even disagree more firmly about their beliefs. I'll tell a quick story. I heard it yesterday talking about the relationship between Scalia and Ginsburg on the
right,
Supreme Court.
Sure.
Ginsburg, they were actually great friends.
Mm-hmm.
Ginsburg had a comment that seeing one of Scalia's draft opinions made her, it was a dissenting opinion, made her majority opinion that much stronger because
right.
she had that interaction. I think it's the job of the mayor to build relationships, but that's not the answer. I think activists should speak the truth to power. Mm-hmm. Because that narrative has to be part of the conversation. We need to say, hey, our Metro Council is half women. Our city is 52% women. Our council is 25% Black. Our city is 27% Black. We have immigrants, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. Not that those things define who we are as a people, but like our council's pretty representative of who we are, at least in those significant ways. I think it's important to say that, but you guys know the sad truth.
Right.
That for many folks at the state legislature, if in the legislature, if they are pissing off activists in Nashville, their primary voters are giving them a pat on the back.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. So it's counterproductive.
Yep.
Sure.
It's honestly counterproductive. So that's not the full answer either. I think it is vitally important that business interests in Nashville who may have some influence with certain members of the state legislature say, hey guys, like, things are actually overall, and I know most of Nashville doesn't believe this, but for business interests, things are going pretty well in Nashville. We're fueling the state. We're paying for your teachers. Like, don't screw this up.
Well, that, I mean, one of the questions I've had is, you know, given what we've seen with the Tennessee Three and the two, kicking the two Justins out and all of the press that Tennessee has gotten recently, again, focused around Nashville primarily, has this... How has this damaged the city? And that, you know, we've been coasting under this "it city" thing for a bunch of years now, but is that about to end because business interests are going to kind of look around and go, yeah, we're not sure we can deal with this legislature that's kind of out of control?
I mean, business, we'll talk about business in a second, but I mean, I'm focused on enrollment at University of Tennessee,
right,
at OBGYN practices, at hospitals around the state. Mm-hmm. These decisions that are being made are making Nashville and our state feel like a less safe place for lots of people who would want to be here otherwise. And that's a bad thing for our state.
Yeah. And all of us, I don't know about you, but all of both of us have talked about this before. We both have friends that have already moved.
Yeah.
They've already left the city.
Yeah.
Because of state state legislation.
And I know one of your competitors, whom we'll not name either, is using that as part of his campaign.
Sure.
You know, we want you to stay. But, I mean, how would you answer that to folks? Why should folks stay when they don't feel safe in this place?
Yeah. So I think that each person should make their own decision. Let me say that. This, I talk about this all the time on education, right? Our family, each of our six kids and stepkids has attended Metro Nashville Public Schools for at least part of their education. But your kids are not a social experiment, right? You should find the best school for your kid. Similarly, I'm not going to tell anyone, no, you shouldn't move. I will make the case. I think it's important to stay and fight. I'm going to stay and fight. I think it's the right thing to do. I think this city is still a great city, but I think it is really important that we continue to make Nashville feel like and truly be a welcoming place because we're stronger for it.
Absolutely.
We're stronger if we are. We're stronger if we're a welcoming place. And so I think it is an important part of the conversation. And I think, again, I mean, just to repeat, I think the mayor's got to extend a hand. Liberal activists have to speak truth. I think it is incumbent upon the business interests, those who have influence. You know, I won't name names, but... you know who they are. They know who they are. They can say, hey, look, we chose to move our company here a few years ago. We would not be able to recruit the employees we want to recruit if we were making that decision today.
Gotcha.
And they have to say that.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing that will have some influence. It's the job of the mayor to make sure that there is a plan. We've talked about plans more in this conversation than most people.
Right.
There should be a plan. It should be coordinated. It should be consolidated. It should be, oh, you have a great relationship with Representative XYZ, so you should be talking to her. And you've got a great relationship with Senator XYZ. You should be talking to him, as opposed to, like, I'm pissing her off and I'm like, that's just chaos and sloppy.
It's exhausting now. And I mean, my gut has been that I don't feel like Nashville's played hardball back.
Yeah. I mean, here's the downside. And you know this, the Tennessee Constitution, literally the Constitution of the state, means that cities are political subdivisions of the state.
Absolutely.
And this is the part that I think you probably won't like. I think that picking political fights is a really dangerous thing to do. That does not mean we don't that does not mean that we compromise our principles.
Right.
We stand firmly on our principles, but we got to be mindful of the fact that like the rules of the game are what the rules of the game are. Mm-hmm. And we've seen when you pick dumb fights, then dumb things happen. Like this is going to be my new tagline as a mayor.
Okay.
I'm not going to do dumb things.
Okay. Do you think
we would love that?
Do you think that the vote on the Republican National Convention was a dumb thing?
Yes. I think that was the wrong decision to make.
Okay.
For two reasons specifically. First is the RNC wasn't coming here.
No.
Right.
They exactly. literally were not going to come here.
No.
Don't take my word for it. Ask the hotels who are here.
Right.
Yeah.
They already had conventions booked, and the bid to the RNC was going to have full rack rate.
Right.
As opposed to Milwaukee, which had already approved it, which had already approved it unanimously, and where they were begging, bending over backwards, offering discounted hotel rates for the RNC to go to a swing state.
Absolutely. Right. It was always going to a swing state.
They weren't going to come here.
No.
Right. I don't believe. But I may be wrong.
Sure.
I may be wrong. Let's say they were going to come here. Great. Mm-hmm. They were going to come here. Great. This should be a welcoming place. And that doesn't just mean that we're welcoming to people who think like you and me.
Right.
It means that we're welcoming to everyone.
Sure.
And so I think it is absolutely the wrong thing. The state cared about it. It was revenue for the city. Mayor Cooper negotiated extensively, as I understand it, with what the state was going to pay for. And so there was a setup. We should have submitted the bid. We don't need to beg for it. We don't need to offer discounted hotel rates. The great news is Nashville doesn't need the RNC.
No.
Nashville doesn't need the DNC. We don't need these conventions.
They should have room for them, honestly.
But we should submit a proposal
sure.
right.
that's reasonable Absolutely. And good for the city and say, hey, here are the terms and conditions under which we would love to have the convention here. And
right.
that's the approach that we will take on businesses, on conventions. These are the terms and conditions on which we would love to have you here. Mm-hmm. But if it's not the right fit for you, that's great. That doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means there's another place that's better.
Right.
You should go there.
We're getting near the end of our okay. time, but one of the things I wonder, one of the critiques I've often heard from several of the council members I met is the feeling that our current mayor has not been transparent, that they just kind of dump things on the council, that there's not been this ongoing conversation. I know our charter structures a lot of power in the mayor's office,
yeah.
but how do you think in terms of bridging the gap that sometimes has been between those, between the mayor's office and the council? It sounds like you're committed to transparency, but what are you going to do to kind of build up those relationships as well?
Yeah, no, really important question. It starts with just honestly caring. Like mm-hmm. I actually honestly care. You know who knows a lot about Madison? Mm-hmm. Nancy Van Rees knows yeah. a lot about Madison. Because she has a council district that has 19,000 people who live in it,
right?
I mean, so it starts with communication, with respect, with listening. I am not the smartest guy in the room. There are a lot of smart people, and I want to hear from each one of you who are listening to this podcast about what the things are that we should be doing. So it starts with that. I've seen some people do it really well. Mm-hmm. Marty Zygas was the council liaison for Mayor Dean, did a just fantastic job. It is about clear communication about priorities. Here's what we want to do. There are all kinds of things that pop up. Council mm-hmm. members want sidewalks. There should be transparency about, I talked to NDOT. We need 4,000 miles of sidewalks in the city. That's what the various plans say. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's 4,000 miles, right? There's a first mile priority and there's a 4,000th mile priority. There should be clarity. There should be clarity about the rules. Here's why we prioritize this one over this one. It connects a school to a neighborhood. It connects a residential area to retail, right? Mm-hmm. Let's be clear about it. Let's communicate. Let's listen to the council members. Let's understand what their priorities are. And then let's have a conversation. Hey, I know you want a new stormwater investment on this street, but the reality is three people live on that street. And I know right. one of them's your grandmother, but like, we're not going to do it. I'm not suggesting any council members have done that, but it's just about clear communication about
ours has.
yeah, exactly.
Why we're doing it and what we're doing and why we're doing it.
So you have a final question.
Well,
I think.
Always. And it's, you're running against some good folks. I mean, there's some really good people in the race.
Absolutely.
We have the sort of blessing of good options. But, you know, I want you to set yourself apart a little bit. It's like we all have, there's three things on everybody's website, right? And it's like housing and blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows what the three things are. What sets you apart? What gives you, when you get into the seat, you know, what is it that makes you the right guy? Because we want to end on a note that causes a vote.
Sure. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I'd say there's two things. First is I have a proven track record of taking on big challenges for this city. I was the president of the board of Hands on Nashville during the May 2010 floods. When unemployment rate was over 8%, I went to work in the mayor's office. When I saw affordable housing as one of the biggest threats to our city, I went there and worked on affordable housing. I serve on the board of the PTSO at Hillsborough High School. I am investing in public education. I have a proven track record of raising my hand to take on big challenges, and I have a proven track record of success in doing that. So that'd be the first thing. And the second thing is even more specific. I have actual executive experience at Metro Government. As you guys know, but not all the listeners may, Metro is a really complex organization. It is a $3 billion budget, 17,000 employees, 56 different departments. And there are some great candidates running who have legislative experience or experience at the state, but I have actual executive experience. And so I think it is important to have someone who has executive experience at the local government level to be able to come in and manage this organization to achieve the things that we talked about at the top of the show. Filling the potholes, picking up the trash, having a plan, not a plan that sits on a shelf, but a plan that can be executed and deliver results for Nashvillians. I think that I have a track record of having done that and the experience and know-how to be able to do it for Nashville today.
Fantastic.
Is there anything we forgot to ask you?
Where you can donate to Matt Wilshire for mayor. You're so excited after having heard this.
Yeah.
So my website is wiltshire.com. Wiltshire is a tricky name, W-I-L-T-S-H-I-R-E. Go to wiltshire.com or Google Matt Wilshire to check it out. There are plans on my website, more information about me, and would love to hear from you as well. And would love to hear what your ideas are to fix this city, because I think we can do it together.
Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Great to have you. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
So that was another great interview.
Wow.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that a whole bunch.
I did. And you know, he talks about wanting to be transparent. I felt like he was.
Yeah.
You know, he's a politician for sure.
Yeah, but he's running for mayor.
He's running for mayor.
But I don't feel like he certainly wasn't dodging anything. And I like the way he really does engage in it. I know you're not where you can see any of this stuff because we haven't upgraded our lives enough to be on YouTube. But he is an engaging guy that looks at you, I think, when he's talking to you. He doesn't look like he's trying to think of what he's going to say next. I think he's clearly thought out his positions. He knows where he's at on these things. And he's got a tremendous amount of history in Nashville, so I think it's an advantage for him.
Yeah, no, I think so. So we are still working on reaching out to the other candidates to try to get them on this.
We're going to keep doing it.
We're going to keep doing it, and hopefully we will be able to get another one done here in another week or so, and we'll see what we can do. And honestly, if you have any specific questions for the candidates,
pop them up on Facebook.
Go to our Facebook page. Here's the thing to remember: if you're searching for us, you need to include the. If you just
say B&A,
if you just do B&A podcast, it won't show up. But you have to, if you do
the
B&A podcast, the only one, I guess, but
it is.
You will find us. And so leave us a comment, and we'd love to be able to ask questions along the way.
And I have had some that were asked of me from other folks, and we incorporated some of that stuff.
You ask when you're out Uber driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I do surveys.
So where have you eaten lately?
I was in Dayton, Ohio. That doesn't count.
That doesn't count. Where in Nashville? You been anywhere new?
I have. Where was I? I went someplace. We talked about it the other day. I don't know. I'll think of the name of it in a second. I finally went to Snooze and had breakfast.
Oh, at Doe's?
No, it's Snooze.
What's Snooze?
It's the one at Hunter Station.
Oh.
And so right behind Hunter Station, they opened a big new breakfast cafe there.
Oh, I didn't
and,
know that.
And it's been there for a few months now, but I finally was able to get there.
Was it good?
It was quite good.
Good.
It was expensive. You know, it's East Nashville prices.
We still so need it was to go, good. We still need to go to Cracker Barrel. I still have those gift cards.
Yeah, right? You know? I mean, what's up with us not going to Cracker Barrel?
So the place that I've been to recently is this place called Bite a Bit. It's a Thai and sushi place over in Inglewood, kind of right next to Dose Coffee Shop over in that Inglewood Village.
The other Dose.
The other Dose. And I have to say, I've been there a couple of times now. It's not the cheapest place in the world, but it is. The food is really good, and the atmosphere is really good. And so I encourage folks to... what is it called again? What did I say? I never can remember if it's Bite a Bit or Bit a Bite, but it's Bite a Bit. So I encourage you to check it out over in Inglewood.
So you did say it right. That's important.
I did. And check it out in Inglewood. I think it'd be great. Anything?
I have to remind people that Rio Grande Fencing is the official fencing company of the BNA podcast.
Have they given us money to do that?
They have way better.
Oh, they've given you tickets, but you've not allowed me to go.
Well... Okay, so Rio Grande Fencing is the official fencing company of half of the BNA podcast.
Okay.
Because I don't have control over the tickets, so I just have to go, thanks. But
well, you need to tell them. This time, if they're going to sponsor us,
right,
right,
exactly. This time, we had the VIP tickets, and you get to sit in this little area, and there's free food and drinks and things and all that. It's not a box.
Okay.
They're open seats. You come right out and sit. Great seats.
Okay.
And they have like, but there, you go inside and there's an entire line just for wings.
Ooh.
Then there's an entire line for pub food. And then they had Philly cheese steaks. And then they had an enormous number of cookies and sweets and every soft drink you could want and all that. I'm sure they have plenty of cocktails and things. I don't know what the deal is on that.
Yeah.
But, man, did I eat a lot.
You know, the one time, or not the one time, I've been to the Preds games a couple of times, not a lot. But one time I went, and a buddy of mine worked for Vanderbilt, and we got to go in the Vanderbilt box.
Yeah, it's a good way to go to Bridgetown.
And the best thing was the dessert cart.
It's fantastic.
About halfway through the game, they rolled the dessert cart around. It was pretty phenomenal.
It's my kid's favorite memory of my tenure at Disney is the fact that we had skyboxes at all the X games.
Ooh.
And, you know, when you've got kids that are from, well, I was there from their birth until they were like 16 to 18. This is a pretty good perk.
This is a pretty good perk.
You get
perk
to bring like 14 of your friends, and I get to bring a couple of dads, parking passes, and a skybox to watch people jump, flip over motorcycles and things. Now, we didn't do that. We sat in the thing and ate, drank, watched golf on TV.
Gotcha.
But the kids were all out front watching the X Games. It's their favorite. It is really fun to do. And
cool.
There's some beautiful boxes at Bridgestone and Nissan. I've been able to be in both, and they're great.
Today, before we end, today's a very special day for your wife.
It
you
is, in
talk
fact.
About that?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. It's 25 years ago today, my wife had just been arrested and the previous day and was probably having a bologna sandwich about right now.
Right.
And turns out she has celiac disease, so that was doubly bad.
Yeah.
So she was poisoned by both the meat and the bread. But today she celebrates 25 years clean and sober. We're going to host... a pretty big gathering at our house, and then she'll be speaking tonight on that subject to a bunch of people that'll gather out in Old Hickory. But congratulations to Nadia for 25 years clean and sober today.
We love you, Nadia. So we hope you'll join us next time. Thanks for checking out the BNA podcast.
It was fun to hang out.